So my rabbi had a funny theory about this week's parsha. I never agreed with him, but I think it's very interesting. Moshe doesn't appear in the parsha, only Bilam. So he liked to think that Bilam was Moshe incognito, as if Moshe had gone into private practice, going from a .org to a .com, you know, going into the for-profit business of prophesying and seer-seeing, which I thought was cute but silly, which was very unlike my rabbi. He's very funny, but he's not very kitschy. But I thought it was a very interesting idea. So there is some precedent for it in Sifrei, in one of our midrashim about the parsha, that describes the closing of Devarim, the closing of the Torah, there never would again rise a prophet such as Moses. And the midrash notes that among the nations there were prophets like Moses. And who was such a prophet? It was Bilam, the son of Beor. There were differences of degree, of quality, but not of paradigm. They both spoke from God. They just understood and received prophecy differently. Okay, it's an interesting theory. It's very amusing. I don't agree with it. It seems pretty far-fetched. But the idea of Bilam being in the same line of work, so to speak, as Moses is suggested by Torah. It is true, it is consonant with Torah's conception that other nations had prophets and revelations and true divine relationships. Ours may have been superior and higher by degree, but not qualitatively different. So what is wrong with Bilam? Why do our sages hate him so much? I think it's not just contained in the episode of the prostitution at Peor, the idolatry that occurs towards the end of our chapter that introduces Pinchas. I think there are a couple of key moments where Bilam fails at his test. So one of the ways qualitatively or that we know that Bilam is a different sort of prophet than Moses is that the description of how God speaks to Bilam uses different Hebrew, is grammatically different. It says there was an occurrence unto Bilam. It happened to Bilam, not God called to Bilam. Very similar words in Hebrew, but very significantly different in meaning. That it happened. God happened upon Bilam. To which the Hasidic aphorism is that it's a hallmark of evil and unholiness to just say, it just happened. Nothing is coincidental to a Jew. Every event has to be purposeful and significant, enriched by God's presence, understood to be a part of God's, if not plan, then God's world, that we feel God in the moment to moment. So you'd be surprised in my time on the beach how much I think of you, how much I think of this congregation, how I can't get Heskamuna out of my head. And I've been, as I mentioned when last here, having a really good year, and thinking about our future, thinking about the work we do together, thinking how to strengthen this place, even as some of you may know, through the JCC, through the Alliance and the Federation, we're rethinking the way communal organizations relate to each other, beginning that process, beginning a process of holistic visioning and planning and long-range consideration, both financial and otherwise. And I think in such a process, in the life of a synagogue, in the life of a Jewish community, in the future of a Jewish community, nothing can be incidental or coincidental or happenstance. That our work can't be haphazard, but must be mindful, or to use a jargony business term, planful. There's a ghost in the speakers. So one of the things I think that one of my mentors, Rabbi Mark Borowitz at Beit Tshuva, at the rehab where I worked, would describe was that prayer, for example, should always move us, should always have an effect on our souls, that even one grain of sand must move. There's a Mexican visual artist named Francis Elise who did a video project of people moving a mount of sand one grain at a time or one teaspoonful at a time. And that's, he thinks, the notion of prayer, that it should serve our souls to move us even in some small direction. So I think the real curse, the real stigma on Bilam and Bilak is, towards the end of the parsha, all this happens. all this magic of a talking donkey and the praise that comes out of Bilam's mouth when he would curse happens. All these phenomenal events happen and they just go home. They remain unchanged. They part from the scene, never really to be encountered again, as they started. That's unwise. You know, this is an embarrassing comparison, but I just saw Spider-Man, which was great. But superhero movies, when they're done well, the person changes. Any movie, really. It's one of the things I don't like about biopics is that a human life doesn't have that kind of natural arc that a good narrative does. But a character, a person, ultimately should grow, should see an arc in his or her life. And Bilam and Bilak remain unaffected by the events. And as Mark Borowitz would say, the goal of our synagogue, the goal of our community should be to change lives, that your spirit, your soul, your nefesh should not be the same once you encounter this community, once you begin to pray and observe Shabbat and share these moments with a community and study and learn and grow, you shouldn't be the same person you were before you stepped into a synagogue. That should be one of our goals. The other, to go back to the very first moments that I encountered this synagogue, and it was in writing, the very first moments when I read about this synagogue in the questionnaire you put together in 2009, I think they were words roughly of Wendy Bestman's, that we celebrate God with awe and joy. And now, it's been a while, it's been about 8 years, but I remember with Karen reading through a lot of surveys of synagogue, probably 20 to 30, and they're all very bland and parve, most. We're warm, we're Hamish, we're inviting, yada, yada, yada. Everyone says the same thing. And I remember that phrase because no one else said anything so clear and distinct. And that's also an important piece of looking forward. An institution can't be all things to all people, nor should it be generic, nor should it be parve, nor should it be bland or unassuming or unthreatening. We have to take our niche, look for what our value proposition is, to use Marianne Merrill's idea. Think about what we really contribute, both to the Jewish community, to the East Tennessee community, and to the world at large. What is our goal? And I've offered some, but hopefully in the next period of time we'll start thinking as a larger community about what each institution has to contribute. And I think one of ours is that awe and joy, that at our best we bring awe and joy and love and growth and healing. And so one of the compliments I think our Talmud gives Bilam is that he knew a secret about God. So the Talmud asks if God has anger. And the Talmud's general response to God's inner life is that God has all the inner life we do, maybe not in the same proportions, maybe not with the same lack of emotional regulation that a human being might have, but God understands all of those things. So God does get angry, has indignation every day. And how long does it last? 158,888th part of an hour. Just the sliver. They're just the right amount of anger. I think it's Socrates who says the trick is to get angry at the right amount at the right time. And no creature could ever understand or comprehend when this was happening except Bilam. Bilam could fix that moment in time, and that's when Bilam would seek to curse and to bless others. What I think that says for us is that righteous rage is a part of our work, that standing up for others is a part of our work, but that the majority of our work is to uplift the world in joy and holiness and celebration. And as we look forward as a community, as I'm thinking on the beach and counting the grains of sand on the beach, and thinking of our future that will be, God willing, better than our past, that's one of my hopes for us, that we not dwell in places of anger or resentment or bitterness, that be a very small sliver of our communal life, but that joy, celebration, and bringing forth the wisdom of Judaism be our effort, be our vision. That famous quotation that becomes part of our liturgy, Ma tovu ohalecha Yaakov mishkenotecha Yisrael, how beautiful, how great are your tents and your dwelling places, Israel, comes in this week's parsha. Bilaam also offers that those who bless you will be blessed. Those are the things I wish for us. Greatness, success, striving. And to do that, we have to be enlivened. We can't fall into complacency. We can't do what we've always done just because it sort of works. We have to struggle to think together, to be part of this communal conversation, but also have to have smaller discussions within our narrower congregation about what our value is, what our richness is, what is, to quote Mary Beth Leibovitz years ago, the best version of ourselves. So I'll offer you a few things, and then I'll give you a blessing for the road. So as I said, one of my favorite moments, one of my favorite descriptions of a prophet is when Bilaam says, I am fallen, but with gilui einayim, my eyes are open. And so Ibn Ezra, one of the great medieval sages, says part of what that means is his heart is awake. I've been feeling that this year, at least in myself, and I hope it's reverberated among us, that my heart has started to reawaken after maybe a slumber. And that I wish that for us as we move forward. And I'm only here this Shabbat, and then I'll be away a little, and then I'll be back a little, and then I'm going to Camp Nadav for a week. So I'll be in and out until August. But I like the image of us being uplifted with our heart awake. And so I would bless us with the success that Israel has at the moment of the parsha. I'm walking on the beach, and I'm wondering, are there more grains of sand in the world than there are stars in the universe? You know, Israel is blessed. Jacob is blessed with to be as numerous as the stars in heaven and as numerous as the sand of the sea. Marcus is already nodding, but I'm going to give a little quiz. So, grains of sand in the world, stars in the galaxy, galaxies in the universe. Definitely by that, let's say stars in the universe. Which is the most? What order would you put them in? Take a stab. Stars in the galaxy, stars in the universe. Well, stars in the universe has to be big. Galaxies in the universe. Stars in the universe is greater than grains of sand in the world? Nope. Stars in the universe or stars in the galaxy?
Universe.
Okay, yes. Stars in the universe greater than grains of sand in the world. Stars in the universe, I think, is on the order of like 10 to the 24th. It's some number, I forget the original number, with 24 zeros. Grains of sand is 10 to the 17 or 10 to the 18, which is, I think, a quintillion. I mean, no one's counted any of these things. And stars in the galaxy is about 100 billion. And as Mark pointed out, you have actually more neurons, slightly more neurons in your brain than stars in the galaxy. Just look at this incredible number of richness and fulfillment and achievement and success that God is selling us, that God gives to Abraham, to be this uncountable thing. I mean, to be honest, the number I'm giving you for grains of sand is just an approximation based on a teaspoon of sand and sort of an extrapolation for how many teaspoons of sand there must be on a beach and how many beaches there must be in the world. And as far as I understand, looking online, there's no those are all estimations of total stars in the world, in the universe. But that we should be great, that we should be greater than we have seen as a community, both within this congregation and in our broader Jewish community and in the world, that the future of the Jewish world is better than its past. It won't look like it did in the past. That's the struggle. There's always been hand-wringing in Jewish communities. Oh no, we're the eternally dying people. But when Bilaam looks out over the people, he tries to squint, he tries to narrow his vision so that he can curse just a small group, because he's never able to look at the whole of Israel and really see something worth cursing. You have to kind of squint and look at a narrow corner. And Ibn Ezra, again, the same sage, says that they are spread out to the four corners of the earth, that they are in the cardinal directions, north, south, east, west. That's the way they camp. And thereby, Bilaam can never look at all of them at once. And they are like the dust of Jacob. That's one of the blessings. Just as everyone treads upon the dust, but in the end, the dust remains. So it will be with the Jewish people. That we here, and we in the broader Jewish world, if you've read anything in sort of Jewish population surveys, studies of demography and religious communities worldwide, or at least America-wide, the numbers aren't good. And yet I think there is great cause for optimism. I don't think Jewish life, I don't think Christian life, for that matter, if you look at Crossings, the church, my favorite church downtown, it doesn't look like churches and synagogues have looked in the past. We have to be open to new revelations, to new experiences, but I do believe that we will once again be as successful as the stars of the galaxy, the neurons in our brains, the grains of sand on the beach.